Poet Galway Kinnell won the 1983 Pulitzer Prize for his book Selected Poems. After reading the collection, critic and poet Robert Haas wrote, "It's increasingly clear that Kinnell's ambition all along has been to hold death up to life, as if he had it by the scruff of the neck, and to keep it there until he enacted a blessing from it." Kinnell published his first book of poems in 1960. Since 1981, Kinnell has taught at New York University. He also directs NYU's creative writing program. We invited him to the studio to talk about his work and to read a stanza from his new poem, When One Has Lived a Long Time Alone. The poem is published in this month's Atlantic Magazine.
When one has lived a long time alone, one likes alike the pig, who brooks no deferment of gratification, and the porcupine or thorned pig, who enters the cellar, but not the house itself, due to eating down the cellar stairs on the way up. And one likes the worm, who by bunching herself together and expanding rubs her way through the ground, no less than the butterfly, who totters full of worry among the daylilies as they darken. And more, one finds one likes any other species better than one's own, which has gone amuck, making one self-estranged when one has lived a long time alone.
This is a poem about living in exile from people, in a way, and having this temporary bond with insects and animals, and
yeah, kind of
instead of people.
It's living alone, and it's living kind of bitterly alone in a way, and so it could be characterized as depression. However, depression usually doesn't have that lively interest in other beings.
Yeah.
You know, depression generally closes off interest in everything. So it isn't really depression. It's more misanthropy, really. But it's got something, it's connected to depression.
Is this a period you feel like you're in now?
No. That is behind me. The period ended the moment I put the last touch, the finishing touch on the poem.
So you started
There's no connection between finishing the poem and the termination of that period. But this did happen, that for a year and a half I lived in rather severe isolation.
Can I ask what brought you back from that, quote, exile?
Well, in part it was discussions with a very wise doctor that I'd been seeing. In part it was escaping from the clutches of psychopharmacologists. In part, it was deciding to rejoin the species. And in part, it was falling in love. And finally, it was climbing a mountain. This was in northern Italy. Along the path, there were little tableaus showing the life of Jesus. And it begins, the first tableau, it's a path that leads up to a church quite high along on a cliff. And the first tableau at the bottom shows Jesus being born and calling out or whatever. You could see his mouth is open. And, of course, there are animals in the barn where he's born. And they all must be making a kind of wonderful, harmonious music together. And loving people are hovering over this child. So the child is born in complete kinship and in oneness with all the other species, the way our species was born and the way each of us individually is born. And then the tableaus show the gradual isolation of this man. But the thing about those later tableaus was that this was a, you know, extremely beautiful place where I was, extremely beautiful. So the thing about those later tableaus was that These depictions of heaven, with their all the gold and the angels singing and everything, well, it looked awfully tawdry compared with this world where I was actually standing. You know, as I turned to from the tableaus and looked at our world, and saw how extraordinarily beautiful it is, then something happened to me, and some kind of peace and fearlessness came into me, which haven't left me. So those are some of the things, I think, that have roused me from this misanthropic isolation. And I cannot believe that I will ever fall back into it again. I just can't think that would happen. Don't call me up, though.
And check.
And check.
You strike me as someone who, consciously or unconsciously, allows himself to experience emotional extremes. And
but I think it's in that,
and then end up writing about it in some way.
It seems to be in the nature of the art, really. I don't think that I'm, you know, a very clear example of this myself, but I feel it in myself too, and it's something like that, of exposing oneself to, allowing oneself to carry an emotional state to pretty far.
I want to quote something that Donald Hall, the writer, once said in talking about your work and in talking about what your work was not. He said, there's a lot of poetry that is too damn life-affirming, not seriously life-affirming, just affirmative, like the boosters in Reader's Digest. And this was an example of what your poems were not.
Oh, good.
he says, but Kennell knows we live by emptying ourselves. I don't know what he means by that myself, but... but I was wondering if you would agree with Donald Hall there that too much poetry is consciously life-affirming and superficial in its own way.
I don't know if what poetry...
Let me put it this way. Yeah. Let me ask you if you share his distrust of life-affirming poems.
I would, in discovering a life-affirming poem, I would want to know, through the poem, if there's some area of some crucial area of experience had been left out, some troubling area of experience had been glossed over, and that I would want to know if it was at the price of ignorance that peace was achieved, and in which case it wouldn't be interesting.
This might sound like an off-the-wall question to you, but we've been talking mostly about isolation, alienation, things like that. A friend of a friend was saying that when they used to see your readings, this was years ago they were referring to, that after the reading there would always be like swarms of young women coming up to the podium to try to meet you, poetry groupies, as she called them.
That's mostly a myth.
Is it?
But in any case, even to the degree that it is not a myth, the kind of... special attention you get when you're on a stage, you know, especially when you're reading poetry, which touches people in their hearts, you know, and causes them to come up to you afterwards more openly.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of renders all the more sharp the contrast between the life of on the stage and normal life afterwards. So there might have been, of course, everybody who gives readings publicly, you know, knows there are these bright moments when everyone loves you and makes a lot of you, but it doesn't mean anything really. Afterwards, you go back to your normal life, and poems are not written on stages. Poems are written in dingy attics, and there's no way around it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your poems. Thank you.
A pleasure.